FM Rewind, File 88.1.
Now, a 2024 report by the World Health Organization stated that 15% of working age adults had a mental disorder back in 2019. The number has gone up, especially in places like South Africa, where mental health isn't just affected by work, but by unemployment too. Let's be real. I mean, the modern workplace is a major mental health battleground, from toxic bosses to unrealistic workloads, poor leadership, which often leads to stress, burnout, and depression. And if you are unemployed, that mental toll could be worse. I mean, South Africa is ranked as having one of the highest unemployment rate in the world. And research shows that long-term unemployment is strongly linked to psychological distress, you know, self-harm, hopelessness, especially among our youth. And whether you're clocking in at, I mean, an under-resourced hospital, risking your health in a steel plant, perhaps eMalahleni or Rakakwa Valley, or simply trying to stay afloat while job hunting, mental health matters. And I've had so many young people talking to me saying, "Harvey, yo, I know it pays well. It looks good on the outside, but it's tough. My boss is hectic. The workload is tough. I can't sleep. I don't even have time for family." These are some of the stories that we hear from young people talking about workplace bullying. And tonight, I want us to have a conversation and talk to you as a young person who is currently employed, but every morning you dread to go to work because of that particular HR manager, that particular boss, that particular CEO. Dr. Onke Mazibuko is joining us live and direct in studio. He is a seasoned mental health professional with extensive experience working across diverse settings, including corporate environments, schools, universities, NGOs, and rural areas. He specializes in designing mental health in interventions tailored for individuals, groups, and broader communities. And in addition to his clinical work, Dr. Onke is an accomplished author of, fiction known for weaving powerful mental health themes into everyday narratives. I'm currently holding the book right now. It's called Carnery. We're going to talk about it because I see an X. I don't know if that X stands for dismissal, but he will tell us more about that. Doctor, thank you for joining us, and welcome to Voice of Vets 88.1.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
I mean, to start off with the conversation, Doctor, I did mention earlier on that there are so many young people who are battling with mental health challenges. Some dread to even go to work. When it's Friday, they get excited, but when it's a Monday, it's a different topic. How important is a healthy workplace environment?
Oh, I think it's absolutely the priority of an organization. You know, I mean, there's an organization out there, an international one called the Top Employer Institution, and any company can apply for registration with this organization, and basically they send people to come and assess your company. Majority of the things they look at are wellness and inclusion.
You know what my problem is, Dr. Onke, is that young people are threatened. Every time they think of raising their issues, they are threatened. You see the unemployment statistics that we have. Where are you going? Why do you want to resign? They're always threatened. And I want us to talk about the most common mental health challenges that young people in South Africa are facing in this day and age. What are they?
I mean, depression and anxiety can come in many different forms, but for myself as a therapist, seeing many people one-on-one, it's always either depression or anxiety, and caused by either an existing problem or one that is being created through fears, or one that is created through traumas that the people are carrying with them in all the situations that they go into. And the workplace, whether you have a job and you're in there or you're the seeking employment, plays a major part in the minds of young people.
How do I know as a young person, perhaps it's 6 months in this company and I still have a certain level of fear. Mm. How do I know that, well, it is beyond fear? Now it is depression. It's leading to anxiety. How can I tell?
Well, for one, if you just have an overall negative mindset, like you feel negative about everything, like if you're struggling to wake up in the mornings, you're struggling to actually enjoy the environment that you're in, if you're noticing things like you're not delivering in terms of your output and you're worried about the way that you're performing, if your sleep is getting affected, if your appetite is getting affected, if your interpersonal relationships are getting affected, like whether it's with your intimate partners, with your friends or your family, or even with your colleagues. So these are all signs that, you know, perhaps it's not just you and there's something that you need to reach out to somebody else for in terms of seeking help.
Sometimes as a young person in a new company, you are told, no man, he's just a boss, that's his character. But how do I tell that no, it has nothing to do with his or her character? She's toxic, he's a toxic boss. How can I tell?
So I mean, I know it's very difficult for the someone who's not trained in mental health to kind of know whether a person has a specific mental health personality that's toxic, for example. But I think it's important that a person, even though there's a responsibility for an employer to provide wellness services, a person needs to understand within themselves, what are my coping strategies? What is my basic emotional makeup? Mm-hmm. So, for example, and this is just one theory in psychology that I like, there's one that identifies different coping strategies. So one could be you are a people pleaser, one could be you're a perfectionist, one could be you are a detached person. When you feel overwhelmed, you choose to pull away. And one is you become a narcissist when you are pushed into a corner, or one is you choose to behave like a sociopath. So when you have a sense of what kind of emotional makeup you have, you become aware of what kind of people trigger you. So for example, if you know you're a people pleaser, then you should know that you're going to attract people with narcissistic tendencies. And so if you meet one in the workplace, it's important that you understand how to navigate that space. And I mean, if a person is asking, well, how are they going to find this out? There's a lot of assessments on the internet, which are not really that difficult. Even if you just Google personality test that I can take online, it will give you a sense of whether you're a person who likes to be left alone, whether you're a person who thrives on relationships and in a workspace you need that, or if you're a person who just basically wants to be given the task and clarity and you focus on that without the interpersonal. But I think it's important for everyone going into a workspace to have a basic understanding of what kind of emotional makeup they have.
Now, I need this job as a young person because it adds up to some of my financial goals. It adds up to the skills that I want to acquire. But I have either a colleague who is toxic, and in as much as I want to distance myself, I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm moody, because these are the labels that young people are given. She's too moody. She's too serious. How do I then navigate that, especially when I have a colleague that I perhaps share a desk with every single day? And I don't want to sound moody. I don't want to now look like I'm better than everyone. But how do I navigate that, Chan?
I think if a person in the work, a young person in the workspace is feeling overwhelmed, it's important to have a mentor. I heard in the conversation earlier on that came up. I think that is something that is essential for every young person, just to, you know, even if it's someone from outside your department, but go to somebody who has been there for a while and see if that person can't help you navigate that particular environment. For sure, a person shouldn't keep quiet about it, because I feel like South Africa does have a good constitution and good employment laws. So it's not easy to get rid of someone who is underperforming or the company doesn't want for any reason. But I think a lot of companies understand that people don't know their rights and people don't have that self-esteem to feel like they can speak up and be protected by the company. But I feel people should be aware of, within their company, what are the processes that they can take from an HR perspective if they they're having a challenge with the person that they're reporting to and things like that, and the policies. But just in general, I think the constitution and the law does protect employees, and young people just need to be aware of that.
You know, South Africa is known to have good laws, if I can put it like that. You know, we have so many amazing laws, but the problem is following and adhering to certain laws. And I want us to talk about the current labor laws and HR systems. Are they doing enough to protect workers, especially making sure that their mental health is prioritized? Or are we at a point where, looking at the economy, we just want to make a profit? Where are we?
I mean, it's hard to speak for every single company. So I can speak from experience of companies I've worked in. I've worked in companies which on paper have brilliant HR policies, especially from a wellness side. They have the support structures, they have numbers you can call, to people you can speak to. But even with those in place, it doesn't mean that you don't go through that mental anguish of dealing with somebody that's right there in front of you. So on the one side, I think on paper the laws may be great, but the people that are in the positions of power then can either sway that positively or sway that negatively. So I've had experiences with good bosses who, if they could help me, they helped me. If they couldn't, they guided me in the right place as far as HR is concerned. Then I had others who, even when I followed the right processes in terms of reporting someone who was a senior and I felt like they were doing things that were overstepping the boundaries, there was intimidation of sorts that kind of came through depending on who you are affiliated with. And that comes down to an individual person. So I don't know how much more companies and the law or the government, for say, can do outside of putting down things on paper, because ultimately it's people that hold those spaces. And people need to be able to be accountable or treat other people with dignity that they deserve.
You know, a day before yesterday, I was watching a YouTube channel by a video that was done by Jen Nomalo. She has a great job, an amazing job. So many young people's dream job. But on that day, she was like, I'm done. I'm done. I've just resigned. I can't do it anymore. When do you know, or do you tell, that it's enough? What are those signs and symptoms should I listen to? In as much as I want the check, it's enough. How do I tell?
Well, for me, your mental health is always connected to your physical well-being. So your body will always tell you if something is off. And I don't think anyone should kind of outrun what your body's telling you. So those are the first signs. So whether it's indigestion, bad sleep, ulcers, headaches, whatever it may be that your body's telling you, I think that's always a good sign. And then always, I feel like all of us in our heads should have a voice that should tell you when a situation is one that you need to get out of. And it's the same with in a relationship. So if a person has a close friend that they've known for a long time, but something keeps telling them that, hey, you know, this friend, you need to be careful of them. Or whether it's an intimate partner, something that's telling you that you, I know you love this person, but there's this thing that they keep doing, you know. You need to train that muscle, that when it's telling you that it's time to get out, then you listen to that, and you have the faith that even though you're going into a situation of uncertainty, you have to have the hope that you will find something eventually and you will land back on your feet. But to stay in a situation that's abusive, I don't encourage it. I don't think anyone should have to be in that situation.
Now, we're going to talk about your book, Canary, in a few minutes' time. But I want to talk to you, a young person, because the reason why I want to focus on young people, it's because, you know, they are naive. So many of them are naive, especially after varsity. You're told, no, you just got a job now. You're going to buy a car. You know, all these dreams, you know, they're promised all these dreams. But what do you do as a young person dealing with workplace bullying? Do I quickly go to my mentor, or should I perhaps go to my HR, or do I speak to maybe a colleague? What are those initial steps that you'd like to advise young people to follow, especially after realizing that, well, I can't do this anymore. It's tough. Mm. They are bullying me.
I would definitely encourage speaking to a mentor or a colleague that has been in that particular environment longer than yourself, because they would obviously understand the culture there and perhaps even understand the culture of another workplace and be able to advise you whether, you know, this is a situation that you actually need to press the panic button now and get out of. The other side of it is, one needs to be aware of what policies are in place in a company. One, it's important to understand the grievance process. Like, if you are unhappy with the person you report to, what are the steps you take? And then the other one is the disciplinary process. If maybe someone is constantly commenting on your performance and they're threatening to give you a warning, what policy is that based on? And then that will generally tell you whether this company is aligned nicely with labor law or whether this is a company that is taking chances. And if it's a company that doesn't have clarity around those kind of things, then for me, it becomes a very dangerous situation for the employee because you're not actually protected in that situation. So on the one side, it's self-education, but definitely connecting with someone who has been in the environment longer.
It's different challenges for different young people. We all come from different backgrounds. Some of us are from Limpopo, others are from KZN, others are from Mpumalanga, wherever. Is it worth holding on the check? Is it worth holding on the fact that, well, I'm getting paid, as long as I'm able to support my family, as long as I'm able to take vacations, is it worth it? Or would you advise young people to quit when it's time to quit?
I would advise a person to hang in there if they understand what their ultimate goal is. So for me, I always say, even if you have a job, make sure outside of that job you know what you're building towards. If you need to stay there until you finish the next step of your learning, sure, and then move on. Don't see the job as an end in itself.
So in other words, focus on the price. You know, this is such a, it's such an interesting conversation that we have in Onke Maziboko, because there are so many young people who are going through challenges holding on to that check. Now, I want to talk about Canary. Why Canary? The title.
So there's a little yellow bird called a canary, and there's a saying in English that says to sing like a canary. And there's also another saying in English that says canary in the coal mine. So this book is about a whistleblower who works in a state-owned company, and he discovers corruption that is being done by his boss and the people around him. And then he's caught in a situation of, does he tell the truth or does he stay out of the situation? Yeah. So to sing like a canary is basically, it means to blow the whistle, to report on corruption. And then canary in the coal mine means you are the person who's been sent into a dangerous situation to kind of find the warning signs. And then if they are dangers, you go and you warn other people. So it's kind of like playing on that metaphor.
Onke Maziboko, author of The Second Verse. I see an X design as one of the covers of the book. I also see the city of Johannesburg. I see one of the tallest buildings there. It's a Telkom building, eh? I also see a Vodacom building. I think they call it a Ponte.
Yes.
Yeah. Why this design? What message are you trying to tell, especially communicating to someone who's just, you know, looking at what to buy, not sure what to buy in a bookstore?
So, I mean, whistleblowing is something that I think is important in South Africa. I mean, if you think of all the stories of corruptions we hear about or ethical leadership challenges that we face, not just in the workplace, but in government and all around us. However, whenever we read about whistleblowers, we read about how they've been assassinated and how they've been intimidated and how their lives have been made difficult.
Yeah.
So the X on the cover that is there with the person in the center is basically saying that, you know, if you choose to speak up against corruption and speak the truth, you're putting a cross on your back and you're putting your life at risk as you know it. However, it is an important thing that still needs to be done. And so when I was writing this book, I wanted the person that reads it to ask themselves that if they were put in a difficult situation, would they do the right thing?
And the yellow color, especially in front and at the back, was it deliberate? Are you trying to perhaps send a message?
Well, absolutely. I mean, a canary is a yellow bird. So there's a lot of symbolism in the book around this canary and this whole thing about whistleblowing. I mean, the main character's name is Magabongwe Ndaga, and Ndaga is also a bird, you know, and also he's quite a runner, you know. In the opening scene, he's standing about to go out and he's hearing the birds in the morning chirping, and then someone pulls a gun to his head, and then the story unfolds backwards with him telling us how he got to that point of having a gun pointed at his head.
All right, just before we wrap up the interview, where can I get this book? Such a lovely book indeed. Listening while you're driving, maybe you're cooking, or maybe you're about to go to campus, please make sure that you go and get a copy of this amazing book by Onke Mazibuko, specifically to you doing your last year. Maybe you are about to start an internship, or you're grappling and dealing with workplace bullying. This is the perfect book for you to read in order to cope and find certain solution on how to deal with workplace bullying. But for those who'd like a copy of this, where can they get it?
The book is available at Take a Lot, Exclusive Books, Bargain Books, basically where a person buys their books, the main retailers. A person can look for it. They can go online and just put my name, Onke Mazibuko, or the book's title, Canary, and they'll see links that they can follow, which will take them to a place where they can get the book.
I love the advice that you gave before we spoke about the book. And I think it's very important for us to emphasize talking about focusing on the ultimate goal. Because, you know, sometimes as young people, we are labeled as people who easily give up. You know, apparently we don't have the thick skin. But I want us to emphasize the importance of, hey, it's okay, you're going through workplace bullying. It's okay you to have a boss who is kind of toxic, but know how to deal with it. And the best way to deal with it is to focus on the ultimate goal. Just an emphasis on that before we wrap up the show.
Yeah, I mean, I loved your discussion earlier about resilience. I think a person has to learn to take rejection, because ultimately when you leave high school and you leave university and you enter the workplace, you're not going to be treated with the same kindness that you've experienced from people that actually know you and care about you. And, you know, there is a case to say a person must learn that resilience, because you're going to need it. And the harder the situation is, chances are whatever you're being prepared for is something that will always be important to you. And I feel like just because you have a job and you're getting paid, that shouldn't necessarily be what your life is about. I mean, you're lucky if you're getting paid to follow your purpose. But for most of us, there's a purpose that we love to do outside of work. And I think it's important for people to maintain that, that you're not going to a workplace to find a sense of purpose necessarily. Yeah. You're getting a means to an end. So even if you're in a difficult and toxic environment, if you've still got your eye on your purpose, the thing you're building towards,
indeed,
it should keep you focused and give you that resilience you need.
Onke Mazibuko, thank you so much for joining us right here on Voice of Vets 88.1. For those who'd like to get hold of you, buy a book, DM you, ask you certain questions, and especially about how to deal with workplace bullying, how can they do that?
Like the previous speaker, on LinkedIn, the professional site, I'm there, but I'm also on Instagram and I'm on TikTok. And if people message me there, then I do respond to them. So,
all right, amazing. That was the one and only Onke Mazibuko, Dr. Onke Mazibuko, not just Onke Mazibuko, right? He's a doctor. He joined us to talk to us about workplace environment and mental health. Very important topic to have. And thank you so much for informing and educating us about this particular topic.
FM Rewind, File 88.1.